Let's turn to Matthew chapter 24 and 25. These two chapters in the Bible we often look at separately, but they should be taken as one whole, because in Matthew 24 we see Jesus giving us the signs of his coming. And this is because the disciples asked him, "What are the signs of your coming?" And in Matthew 25, actually part of 24 as well, Jesus is saying, in a way, well, you're interested in the signs of my coming. That's fine, and I'll tell you the signs. But in Matthew 25, he's saying, now let me tell you what I'm interested in. What you really need to know about the second coming. And this is when he tells them four separate parables. And these are the important things that Jesus wants them to know. So I think you can see that this is where Jesus' emphasis really is. So out of these four parables, we're just going to look at the last one. So I will read out the whole parable, which starts in Matthew 25 and verse 31 and going on to verse 46. So I'm reading from the ESV, English Standard Version. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. Before him will be gathered all the nations, and he will separate people one from another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will place the sheep on his right, but the goats on the left. We are reading from Matthew chapter 25, verse 31 on. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." Then the righteous will answer him, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you?" And the king will answer them, "Truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these my brothers, you did it to me." Then he will say to those on his left, "Depart from me, you cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not welcome me. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit me." Then they also will answer, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty, or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison, and did not minister to you?" Then he will answer them, saying, "Truly I say to you, as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me." And these will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. So there is the passage that Jesus told, probably one of the very last parables in his ministry. And so in it is pictured the judgment, where each person's case is being heard. Each person is judged and then relegated to the left hand or the right hand. of the Son of Man, who is later on called the King. Those on the right are designated the sheep, and those on the left are the goats. When you first read it, it seems like the basis of the judgment seems to be the doing of good works, specifically giving food and drink to the hungry and thirsty, welcoming the stranger, clothing the naked, visiting the sick and those in prison. But actually the king is even more specific than this, because not all the good works count in this judgment. Verse 40 states, "These good works were done to one of the least of these, my brethren." It tells us that Jesus regards how we treat the least of these as we were doing it to himself. So this statement makes me think carefully, and it probably affects you the same way. If you knew that Jesus was in need, would you be quick to fill that need? Of course you would. But when it's someone else, are we just as quick to help? To get an idea of what he's talking about, let's look at some other passages which are quite similar. Let's go back to Matthew chapter 18 and read verses 5 and 6. So Matthew 18, just a few pages back. "Whoever receives one such child in my name receives me." That sounds very similar, doesn't it? "Whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened around his neck and to be drowned in the depth of the sea." Let's look at another passage, this time in Luke chapter 14. And we'll read verses 12 to 14. Luke chapter 14, verses 12 to 14. "When you give a dinner or a banquet, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, lest they also invite you in return and you be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, because they cannot repay you. You will be repaid at the resurrection of the just." So both of these passages tell us to show kindness to those people who are the least fortunate. And it tells us very definitely your ultimate reward depends on how you treat them. So who are the least of our brethren? That's a very hard question, because when you start to list the least among your brethren, you may well leave some people out. And the very people you leave out are the ones Jesus is talking about. These may be the ones who never take church office, never get involved in church activities, the ones who don't speak up in Sabbath school. They're probably the ones who don't come to church often. And of course, they are people we don't visit often, the ones who might be socially isolated. These people, they don't stand out. You don't often think about them. They are the least among your members. And these are the ones that Jesus looks at when he's making this evaluation. It's easy to get busy talking to those who are important. the ones you rely on, the ones who are the top ones in our church. You know, you talk to the people whose opinions matter. They're the ones you go and visit at their homes. But somehow Jesus is more interested in the ones who are not prominent. This became very evident to me. As you know, our minister just started this year. So he asked me when he started, "Can you make a list of the members and tell me a bit about each one?" I hope you're not getting nervous. So I sat down and made a list and wrote down a little bit about each one, and I emailed it off to him. And then the next day I realized, oh, I forgot somebody else. So I wrote another email, which I said, entitled, "One More Member." But in the end, I had put down three of them. So there are people that you fail to think of. It's easy to do the ones that are least among your church members. We need to look out for them. We need to love them, visit them, find out their needs and their concerns, and treat them as if you would have treated Jesus. But I want to draw your attention to another group. And I think maybe Jesus was talking about these as well. Because in the same Gospel, Matthew, let's look at chapter 5 and verse 19. Now this is in the chapter of the Beatitudes, isn't it? The Sermon on the Mount. Matthew 5:19. And it says, "Whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach men so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven." So this is another category of those who are the least in the kingdom, the least in the congregation. This is this person whom you have had arguments with because he or she is teaching something wrong, heretical, something contrary to what we believe, or maybe making trouble, spreading leaflets from fringe groups among the members. Jesus calls such a person the least in the kingdom. Notice he doesn't have them expelled from the kingdom. They still come along on Sabbath. They still maybe make some disruptive comments now and then. And I think you know the kind of person I'm talking about. But what's Jesus telling us here in Matthew 25? He's checking to see how you treat these people as well. Sure, they're a thorn in your flesh. You can't ignore them. But Jesus is asking, how do you treat them? Do you treat them just as if they were me? When people treat you as an enemy, what do you do in return? I know how hard this sounds, and I confess I have real trouble myself. But today, I'm sharing what I found most challenging, and hope that by sharing this, we can help one another. When Jesus bids us to help the least of our brethren, let's remember two things. Firstly, that when he tells us to do something, he has the power to do so. Jesus empowers us to do his bidding. And secondly, what he wants us to do is ultimately for our good. And when we get over it, when we get over our own self-centeredness, this will become a joy for us. Who do you think Jesus was actually talking to in Matthew 5:8-19? Who were the ones making and teaching changes in the law? I think it's likely that he was talking about the scribes and the Pharisees, for they were changing the law by making and adding interpretations to it. Yet, while Jesus points out their errors, he still respects them. Temple tax, though he doesn't have to, he tells people, do what they say. He accepts their exactness in tithing, for example. He treats them well, even when they plot to kill him. Now let's ask, how did the Pharisees treat Jesus? They thought he was teaching error. Did they treat Jesus as they should have treated the least in the kingdom? You see, in a way, Jesus is not here talking about who's got the right or the wrong doctrine, important as that is. But if you consider that some others are teaching error, more important for you to think of is how should you treat them? And the answer is, treat them just as if they were Jesus himself. Even if you know that others are teaching error, he is more interested in seeing what your treatment of them is. For he says they are the least in the kingdom. And he tells you here, in this last of his parables, treat the least of the brethren as you would treat me. It's not an easy thing to treat people right even when they treat you badly. But consider how Jesus treated Judas, his betrayer. Think about Jesus washing this person's feet. Even when he knew at that time that he had betrayed him. And so today when we have our foot washing service, I just want you to remember what Jesus did. It's really something that we should carefully and prayerfully think about.